Hello again, everyone. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Friday morning, boy, the year and the summer is going by. It's August 29th already, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. It's the Roundtable panel. Political consultant Libby Post is here. Rosemary Armeo, who is an investigative journalist and a world traveler and a professor. Alan Chartok is here. Alan, I got to say, the blisters on your fingers are evident.
Yeah.
What have you been practicing?
Yeah, well, when you're a banjo player, you know, with the Berkshire Ramblers, then you're going to give a performance on
the 30th. That's tomorrow.
The 30th.
Yeah, yeah.
So you better practice.
So I got to practice a lot because, you know, that's what happens. And it's if, you know, you want to join us for this joyous evening, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Sold out the last time.
The Guthrie Center.
The
right?
Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Easy to get to. 413-528-1955.
Yeah, and you know, I've never been to the Guthrie Center.
Oh, you should.
Yeah?
Because it's where Alice's Restaurant was filmed.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and that was the original church in which, you know, where young Arlo was holed up with his friends and got the garbage from the Thanksgiving dinner and threw it over the fence in Stockbridge.
With the arrows and...
Yeah. And they judged and the blind justice, you may remember.
Yes,
and all
that was
that.
Great.
Yeah.
It was great.
So as not familiar as I am with the whole folk scene...
Yeah, you like dingle music.
What does the Guthrie Center do? What is the Guthrie Center's mission?
They're fantastic. You know, Arlo started it, and it's dedicated, of course, to Woody and to Arlo's wonderful guru. Her name was Ma, and they a big picture of her up there. And George Lay runs the place, and they do things like free lunches for people who can't afford lunches, and on one day a week, and they have a hoot nanny usually, and that's why it's such a good not for profit that the Berkshire Ramblers are delighted to lend them our efforts and to do this for free, which we never take any.
And what time is the show tomorrow?
8 o'clock.
Right? Okay.
I'm glad that you asked.
And
you can get in at 6 and, you know, if you want.
There'll be tickets at the door?
There'll be some tickets at the door. Hopefully, I think there will be because there were last time, but it did sell out.
Okay.
So again, you know, we hope everybody will join us, and we'll be going to Cafe Lena later in the year around Thanksgiving to do the same kind of benefit.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So can you give us a preview of the set list?
Sure.
She'll be coming around the mountain,
no,
right?
No. Such classics as Hang on the Bell, Nelly, Hang on the Bell.
Which you've done at the Fun Drive, and I love that song.
Your father's locked in his cold iron cell.
I could sing that. I could go out there and help you sing that.
Probably could. You probably could.
And how much are the tickets?
I don't know.
But thank you for asking. So, Alan, you had a chance to talk to New York Lieutenant Governor candidate Tim Wu yesterday.
I did.
And I only heard a couple of sound clips in the newsroom.
Yeah.
Sounded like an interesting talk.
Well, first of all, this guy is the real deal. He is brilliant. He's a Columbia Law professor. He's young. He's in his early 40s. And tenured, you know, a lot of people think he's probably out of his mind to take on Andrew Cuomo and run against Kathy Hochul, his handpicked person from upstate New York. But, you know, there's really fundamental disagreement between Wu and Hochul, and of course, Zephyr Teachout, Rosemary's very good friend, is running for the governor spot head-to-head against Cuomo. And there are a lot of people. One of the things he said that Wu said to me, which was great, he's brilliant. He's
Mandarin,
fluent Mandarin. And he said, you know, look, in a turnout, I'm telling you, in a primary, Democratic primary, maybe you get 10-15% of the people voting. But if you get every Asian American in New York City voting, you know, that gives you, right, Lib? That gives you a pretty good start.
Yes, it does.
If other people aren't going to come out.
Right.
Now, I'm sure the Cuomo people are going to throw the book at them and try to get, you know, her brought over. And the chances are that they'll succeed. But this does look like a potential Eric Cantor type, could be an Eric Cantor type upset. And it really gets difficult because, and Rosemary asked me about this yesterday, it's tough to explain. You run separately for the post of lieutenant governor in a primary. But then, when the general election comes, you run together.
You're paired. The top
so
two
it may
primary
be if Wu
paired.
Wins, then Andrew Cuomo gets a running mate he doesn't want.
It's Al Del Bello all over again.
Al Del Bello all over again, that's right. And that's what happened to Papa Mario.
That's right.
Made life miserable enough for Del Bello that Del Bello just took off.
He went to waste management.
Oh, yeah. Well, that wasn't good. Especially at the time.
Right.
So
he made some comments about the Moreland Commission. Yeah. I have not heard them.
Yeah.
But I heard they were a little fascinating.
Well, they were fascinating. I mean, he went after Cuomo. Why would you appoint a commission that's going to go after, basically look for criminal activity among legislators and then cancel it as soon as they got too close to the people, some of the people you liked or who had given you money. So it really was quite an interview. It's going to be on next Thursday, I believe.
Okay.
It's an hour long thing. You get to know the guy. It's fascinating.
On the Moreland Commission, the note I have from Dave Gustina, who obviously produced it, said, on the Moreland Commission, Wu argued that he believed there was a state crime committed, like when the police chief tells an officer not to write a speeding ticket for a friend.
He did say that.
Well, it'll be a fascinating interview. You think it's Thursday at 1 o'clock?
Yeah, next Thursday. Yeah.
Okay. It is the Roundtable on WAMC. I forgot to give you the email. Every time I fill in for Joe, I forget to give the email address until far too late. And I'm telling you now, it's roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And we love your emails. Try to keep them short, if possible.
Yes, and try to keep them, substantive. We've had a number of personal things about me, they don't like me, they don't like Rosemary, they don't like Libby, but in the end...
They love me. What are you talking about?
But in the end...
On balance, I think you're right.
Those
who love you really love you.
I think you're right about all three of us, to be perfectly honest with you. Nevertheless, new policy, new rule, as we used to say at Camp Bronx House. New rule, and the new rule is... stick to substance. Don't start that stuff because, malevolence is never really recognized or appreciated.
Okay, so benevolent emails, roundtable@wamc.org. European Union foreign ministers are weighing the 28-nation bloc stance in the Ukraine crisis. More news on that front yesterday. It would be wise, prudent indeed, to take a short break now so we don't have to break up the flow. So, Dave, break the flow up now. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Catskill Hudson Bank, specializing in commercial loans for local businesses and organizations. 12 branches in the Hudson Valley, Catskills, and Malta. Now open in Poughkeepsie. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, CatskillHudsonBank.com. Snow Farm, the New England Craft Program. August workshops include woodworking, glassblowing, batik, watercolors, and more. Space available in weekend or week-long classes in Williamsburg, Massachusetts, snowfarm.org. And the Opalka Gallery at Sage College of Albany, featuring art exhibits and other cultural events. First this season is ceramic artist Regis Brody, sage.edu/opalka.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 921. It is the Roundtable panel. Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. So the situation in Ukraine, which we have discussed, and I know this for a fact since March, because I pulled a commentary from Henry Kissinger that we talked about back in March.
He had a plan then.
He had a plan now. As of now, the president is saying, look, Russia is NATO and the president of the U.S. accusing Russia of violating Ukraine's sovereignty. As of this morning, Ukrainian prime minister says government will seek NATO membership. The Russians are saying those weren't our soldiers in the picture. Those possibly could be a video game. Did you see that one?
Yes.
So, before we recap what Kissinger said, which I think is fascinating, this was a commentary he wrote prior to Russia annexing Crimea. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's on the ground now. We'll start with you, Rosemary.
Well, it's a new and heightened threat. We saw this coming. You know, we saw it from back in March, that Putin feels intimidated by what's happening in Ukraine. He does not want a Western ally right on his border. And he has acted through news media propaganda, through supporting Russians within Ukraine, and now apparently by direct invasion. He's moving equipment and troops across a border. I think that qualifies it by definition as invasion, to subdue Ukraine. And we need to act.
The way Russia plays the propaganda game, still it goes right back to the old days. First, they say, these aren't our troops. But then there are those commentators who say, well, yeah, those troops are in there only because Putin says, you've got to let the Ukrainian troops out. They're surrounded. You have to create a corridor to let them out.
If they give up their guns, by the way.
Yeah. So
the guns,
right. Which is which?
It's fascinating. I was in Riga, that's in Latvia, last month, and they have there a museum of the occupation. It was actually built by the Russians when they controlled the Baltics, and it's now a museum of really Stalinist tactics. And oh my God, it was like you were listening to what's happening in Ukraine. It's the same playbook from 1941, propaganda. Russians are under attack in Latvia at the time, Ukraine now. Our troops are just there to protect the Russians and to help you.
Or they're on vacation.
They're on vacation. Yeah,
I love that.
Or, hey, they're not our guys at all. It's so much the same that it was uncanny.
You know, yesterday I talked a little bit about World War I and how it got started. Nobody thought that that would be what it became, one of the worst confrontations in history. And it was because nobody could quite assess it, something that had gotten out of hand. An archduke and you know, and then from there, hell broke loose.
Right. Well, and
you worry about that to some degree here.
And the toys are a lot more dangerous in 2014 than they were in
1914. Yeah, you call them nuclear weapons.
That's right.
So
it's a lot more dangerous.
Well, there's one difference. I mean, I see this more like the start of World War II than World War I. In World War I, everyone was kind of spoiling for a fight. Everything had been dulcet and quiet for a long time. And World War II was more where Hitler's every move was being watched and assessed, and people were trying to figure out what to do. That's what it feels like right now.
Well,
the U.S. does not want to put troops into Ukraine any more than they want to put them into
Afghanistan. So you said something needs to be done. What's that something, Rosemary?
Well, this is, it's interesting. The Washington Post had an editorial today saying Putin's aggression must be answered.
How?
I think a NATO response.
Military response?
Yeah. I am totally opposed to all the wars that the United States has started. I thought they were all ill-advised, and indeed the results have been disastrous. But this is a case where an ally, we have made promises to the Ukraine, and Putin is directly challenging the United States power. This isn't just about
Russia. Okay, I got that. I got that part of it. Now you got to tell me, because you started it, as we used to say in the Shartok Castle.
Right.
You started it. What is it you want us to do? Do you want NATO to go in there and get boots on the ground?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
but
I do.
Look at what is at
stake here. It isn't just Ukraine, although that's pretty major. You've got China looking for a land, that territory it wants to take away from, well, it's in dispute with Japan.
A couple of rocks in the ocean.
Okay.
They're strategic rocks, however.
I mean, you know, this is the whole thing about war. We fight over little hills and little rocks in the ocean. You have Russia interested in Chechnya and in property that belongs to Georgia. Georgia is in danger. If Ukraine falls as easily as the Crimea did, then is not Georgia in trouble? How about the Baltics?
Old domino theory, which didn't turn
out.
That was
in Vietnam.
I do think Putin wants to reclaim the old Soviet Union. What you said before, though, was he doesn't want the West on his border. Well, you know, once he takes over Ukraine, then there's going to be West on his border, and he's got to take over something else, and he's got to take over something else.
That would be the Baltics, and I do believe he is trying to recreate the old Russian Empire, the Soviet Empire that took over. And
it'll be more like the Tsar rather than, in some respects, and more like Stalin and others.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because you brought up the technology. I mean, he has a much easier way to control than the Tsar ever did.
Right.
the threat is much more dangerous. So, yes, I don't think this is anything to take lightly. I truly don't. I think it impacts on all the other places where we're in trouble, including the Pacific, where rising powers are there and fighting among themselves, and in the Middle East, where Putin has played a big part.
In other words, so what's new? Answer, nothing. This is the way it's always been.
Yeah, it's manifest destiny in the 21st century.
It seems to me that NATO is the key word here, which probably A, inspires some dread in Putin, and B, inspires a certain level of perhaps hope in some Ukrainians. And the question of whether they join is a big strategic question on both sides, both the West and in Moscow. And Henry Kissinger wrote about that. We don't have time. I tell you what, after the news, let's recap what he wrote in March about NATO. This morning, our time, NATO Secretary General Rasmussen gave a press conference, and he talked about the four things they are doing non-militarily to help in Ukraine. One of them is beefing up cyber security and things very well short of what Rosemary
boots on the ground
just talked about. We'll talk about what Kissinger said, and this, again, was written prior to the Crimea resolution. And I think you're going to find it fascinating. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Ray Graff. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is a beautiful Friday morning. 9:36 is the time. Libby Post is here. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We call it the Roundtable Panel. We didn't spend a lot of time coming up with a name, so it's just the Roundtable Panel. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.
Or the Roundtable on the Roundtable.
That was the first try, but it was cumbersome.
Or the chairs around the table.
I like that we call it.
No, that's because we did the rugs.
Okay. I like that we call each other the Rounders.
The Rounders?
Yeah. Right. Well, tell the other Rounders.
The Rounder Ramblers.
Yeah. All right, so it's roundtable@wamc.org. That's the email address, boys and girls.
And remember to keep it short.
Right. Uncle Alan, we have some email.
We do. John says, here's what NATO should do. One, quietly behind the scenes, ask the Baltics to start throwing a fit about Russia's actions in Ukraine. Poland will probably join in without needing prompting. Two, quietly ask Turkey to start blaming Russia for the chaos and its Syrian border and making noise about slamming the Bosphorus shut. And three, NATO, using the same, in quotes, language as Putin did, deploys, quote, protective forces to the Baltics, Poland, and any other country that wants it. The troops will, in quotes, not be right on their borders with Russia, but a sufficient distance away. That's from John.
Okay.
So do we want to react to this stuff, or do we want to just read
it? If anybody has a reaction, feel free, Rounders.
He does have troops in. His placement of them is different. And some of that stuff is already happening. The Baltics and Poland are screaming bloody murder.
Okay. Patsy says, good morning. I agree that what is happening in Eastern is frighteningly reminiscent of the buildup to World War III. It just says one. Okay. It is a terrifying prospect in light of the nuclear weaponry possessed by the major players. I just don't know any solutions, hoping that the world statesmen, stateswomen, and their advisors has some possible solutions diplomatically, and I enjoy the show very much. And that's from Patsy.
Thanks, Patsy.
Yeah. And Peter says, Ray, this is addressed almost only to you.
Fine.
Yeah. In World War II, the aggressors expected it would last a few months at most, 4 years, and millions of lives later it ended. Putin is drawing on both Tsarist and Stalinist historic examples. We are in for it because he's sure no one can or will oppose him. He may be right. Just kidding. And that's from Bonnie.
You may not be kidding. Rosemary, this is your point exactly.
That's my point. I don't think this is one that we sit out. I think the United States has squandered money and lives in wars we should not have been involved in. This is something that the military ought to be involved in. This is what NATO exists for.
They're not a NATO party.
As long as it's NATO.
Point.
It's got to be. Okay, it can't
NATO.
Just be us.
All right, well, NATO
because
is the United States, but okay.
Because there's not going to be the political will in this country, I can tell you.
You can call it UN, too. That's still us.
But we have to Ukraine at this point is not part of NATO.
But it's about to join, and NATO, and it, why is it not a part of NATO, Ray? Because we said, don't join NATO, we'll protect you. They didn't want to provoke it. So we have made promises to this country. This is what NATO exists for.
And we don't really know what we've done with anybody because nobody's telling us anything about what's going on sub-channel. In other words, backstage. So you're probably right. Kenner, who writes to us occasionally, says, and is very good, by the way, read a comment in ludicrous Russian denials. Who needs plausible deniability when implausible deniability works almost as well,
parenthesis,
given media insistence on presenting two sides? And that's from Kenner. Okay. And then from Jim, a vet of the Vietnam War. No troops on the ground anywhere without a declaration of war, and then make sure that the 1% serves in combat. I like it. Okay. And then something new has just come in.
All right, sir.
From Will.
Pre-read it.
Pre-read it?
Well, you never know what it could say.
Well, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough to
all right,
do that.
Well, I'll vamp while you read.
Why should we start a ground war with the second largest nuclear power over the Ukraine? No sane person can seriously suggest that it is a good idea. It's not our responsibility. We need to stay out, says Will. Well, there were people who said that in before World War II.
Will, I think you have to look at some history here. This is a bad policy. This is we have to pick where we get involved militarily, but this one seems to be a place where we ought to be involved.
Okay, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org.
Congratulations. I loved all those letters. They were important. They gave positions.
They moved the conversation right where we wanted to go.
Let's keep going.
They succinctly stated the case.
All right, and we're going to go where we want to go, Rosemary. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, sure.
This goes back to March 5th when the Crimea situation was percolating and about to bubble over. Henry Kissinger, this is from the Washington Post, to settle the Ukraine crisis, start at the end, and I'll just read a little bit from that. Far too often, the Ukrainian issue is posed as a showdown, whether Ukraine joins the East or the West. But if Ukraine is to survive and thrive, it must not be either side's outpost against the other. It should function as a bridge between them. And again, this was written in March. The West must understand that to Russia, Ukraine can never be just a foreign country. Russian history began there, and Ukraine has been independent for only 23 years. It had previously been under some kind of foreign rule since the 14th century. Now, addressing Putin, and again, this is before Crimea, before the final sort of the way it turned out, Putin should come to realize that whatever his grievances, a policy of military impositions would produce another Cold War. I say, panel, that's where we are now.
Well, that's what Henry said. And, you know, I mean, it certainly has turned out to be, you know, a pretty good comment.
Yeah, in this piece, he says Ukraine should not join NATO.
Exactly. He had four
position
principles.
They are about to not act, not take his advice on. Again, it heightens the threat to Russia. It does have the right, of course, to create any government compatible with the express will of the people. The Russian does not agree with that.
Interestingly, point four in his principles,
yes, this
incompatible
is most
with the rules of the existing world order for Russia to annex Crimea.
Right. Not only has it done that, but it's now invading Ukraine proper.
The thing is this, is the rules of the world order that Henry Kissinger and diplomacy worked under the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, no longer exist. We're fighting wars with people who are terrorists, and they could give a hoot about international law, how things are usually done. All of that has been thrown by the wayside.
And Marina checks in and says, please do not repeat the nonsense that Putin is threatened. He's a power, and war mongrel. They said mongrel, but I think she meant maybe monger.
And thank you. Yeah. Who wrote that?
That is from Marina, but she goes on. This is not about defending Russia from anything. This is about one individual's desire for power. His personal and professional career was filled with zero accomplishment until he served with St. Petersburg mayor and got a taste of wielding real force. Look at Chechnya. He directed torture, murder, and abduction until he erased any humanity and hundreds of thousands of people to regain popularity on the mainland. You just didn't pay attention to all the Human Rights Watch reports that give Ukraine weapons. They don't need Americans on the ground. Give them the weapons they gave up when Europe and U.S. promised to protect them.
I really think Americans should stop giving weapons. We've given them to... That worked really, really well in the Middle East, as we're seeing now.
It worked really well in Ferguson, too.
Yeah, exactly. And Libby, you're talking about terrorist threats. That's not Putin.
He's an old-school thug.
He is following those rules.
I get that. No, he's not really following the rules of international relations.
He is using them very well, Libby. He's finding all the loopholes in them as well.
I don't know. I mean, I think to go back to looking at how Kissinger managed international relations in the 70s, it just seems like there's a disregard for nation state, there's a disregard for borders, there's a disregard for the way things had been functioning after World War II.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's real politic that Kissinger would... Look, I'm not a Henry Kissinger fan, but I truly think that he may have a point, that at the point at which Ukraine is seen as having to be on one side of capture the white flag or the other, the old game we used to play, that you get into real trouble, and that motivates this. I think some of these letters have been very wise. The idea that Putin is playing not only to the rest of the world but to his own constituency becomes very important in all of this. Ryan checks in and says, I don't know much about the situation with Russia. Why exactly should this be a situation we get involved in? I have friends who are soldiers, and I'm a vet. I don't want to bury any more friends for a piece of rock, he says.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, I have that feeling about the Middle East, where it's oil we're fighting for, a resource. But in Russia, you are unleashing a force that we spent much of the last century, or much of the last half century at least, trying to contain.
And you know, that's what this is all about. Wait a second. Ronald Reagan, we won. Now you're supposed to do what we tell you. Now you're not doing what we tell you.
And that's why I say he is very much in the old school of an aggressive dictator. Going further down from this March 5th column by Henry Kissinger, Russia would not be able to impose a military solution without isolating itself at a time when many of its borders are already precarious. Well, I don't think Putin cares.
No.
Putin is taking a risk. I mean, you can cite his bloody record. That's definitely true. But you can't call him an ineffective leader. He has imposed his will on a country with a lot of problems and has restored a lot of power to Russia. That why does it have it? I think that our government has underestimated him at a cost to us.
Well, George Bush looked into his eyes.
He's a good guy.
Good guy. And Obama said, we're going to pay attention to the Pacific now because the Russia doesn't matter, basically.
Is it a fundamental disconnect between Western thought and Eastern thought? Great quote here. Putin is a serious strategist on the premises of Russian history. Right. Understanding U.S. values and psychology are not his strong suits, nor has understanding Russian history and psychology been a strong point of U.S. policymakers.
Isn't
that what this is all about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We should know by now. We've been dealing with each other for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. And there isn't as much distance between the old Soviet Union and the new Russian bear as we sometimes make out. After all, let's always remember this guy was a KGB colonel.
Yeah, and he was successful at that, despite what the last 3 years said. He had quite a lot of success. And he also has at his service the technology that you brought up. The money for gas and oil.
Let's not think that just because it was the United Soviet Socialist Republic, it was really a socialist republic.
No, no.
It was a dictatorship.
They had the breadlines.
He's a dictatorship. I mean, you know, it's the same thing, just, maybe a little different window dressing.
Nor is what the United States has right now a democracy in the way that we would like a democracy to work. Because as I've said so many times, you don't have information. So there's a lot of back channel stuff that's going back and forth here. Between the Germans and the U.S. and Russians,
it's a republic, sir. If we can keep it,
if we can keep it, sir.
Right. Angela Merkel has been sort of quiet.
Benjamin Franklin.
Lately,
her position's really been changing on this. I think she really is concerned about what's going on, and her acting on it, letting NATO get involved, for example, or giving an okay to that, it comes at a great economic cost to her country, far more than to ours.
So if you're willing to do that. What's the motivating factor for being willing to do that? Is it a direct telephone call from the White House, for example? You have to do this? So I don't know.
Reading body language from the Secretary General of NATO this morning, and this is only subjective on my part, he looked very cautious. And not fearful of Russia, but certainly very cautious not to provoke, even though they said quite clearly, this is a Russian incursion and we have proof of that. So what we've seen in the last week or so is NATO saying we're going to bolster the bases and our presence in the former Baltic republics, not Ukraine, but all around. Mm-hmm. So isn't that a strategy that would sort of be a happy medium between putting boots on the ground in Ukraine and doing nothing at all?
And Elliot, who is the Creating a Culture of Peace chairperson, Meta Peace Team Training Committee member, Veterans for Peace, and past president, it might be worth backing up to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Bush and Gorbachev discussed what would happen. They agreed that Germany would be reconsolidated and that all of it would come under NATO. Part of that agreement was that Germany would come under NATO, but NATO would expand no further east, and Russia would not take advantage of the instability in Eastern Europe. NATO has been in the aggressive position. Remember that we are trying to get our radar close enough to Russia so that we have the power to stop a retaliatory
Excellent
strike.
Point.
What'd you say?
Excellent point. That's it. We have been the aggressor in this. And Putin now has not only called our bluff, he's gone a next step. And NATO has to be ready to go to war, to return to your point, Ray. That doesn't mean that they have to provoke the battle. They can move their troops in and position and say, okay, Putin, bring it on. We're ready.
So Putin has to believe that we would pull a trigger.
Absolutely.
Without question.
Absolutely.
That's the problem. That's how wars start.
I mean, look at the difference between this and the airstrikes against ISIS. Oh, we'll bomb, but we won't put any boots on the ground. We'll just bomb them, and we'll do it on this side of the Iraq-Syria border. So ISIS is sitting back there saying, oh, it's okay. We know what their intentions are. That does not work.
Yeah. Okay, so Elliot had a few more things to say, but let's go to some other guys.
Okay.
T. Koza says, as winter approaches, the flow of gas and oil is putting Trump card involvement in Ukraine will not come without a cost to much civilian Europe.
Yep.
And Russell says, we in the U.S. not a mirror image of the Putin empire? You keep discussing our interest in the Pacific. 2 million refugees from our actions in Iraq, for starters. Come on. Cannot one of you speak against all empires? That's what he says.
All right. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Hopper, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk about the tyranny of 24/7 email.
Support for WAMC comes from Southern Vermont Arts Center, presenting Brian Sweetland's Nature, A Vermont Artist's Journey, Exhibition of Broken Color, Aerial Perspective, and Plein Air Painting, svac.org. Mr. Ruder Plumbing, working to fix slow-draining sinks, laundry lines, repairing and replacing kitchen and bathroom faucets, high-efficiency water heaters, septic systems, and more, thehudsonvalley.mrruder.com. And Stewart's Shops, we are closer to you, with groceries and food to go.
It's the Roundtable on WAMC, the Roundtable panel. 9:53 is the time. Libby Post.
Which you can be part of the Roundtable panel by just WAMC.org.
That's right, you are. That's the email address, roundtable@wamc.org. Libby, Rosemary, Allen, and I guess we have a couple of more emails.
We do, real quickly. Please consider this hypothetical but possible scenario. The French-Canadian separatists successfully and peacefully break away from Canada and set up an independent Quebec. Several years later, a large mob of thousands of people in Montreal overthrow the democratically elected government, establish an anti-USA government, accept millions of dollars of aid from Russia, declare an interest in forming an alliance with Russia, and appoint five ministers in the new government who are neo-fascists. What would or should the U.S. government do? Please discuss. No, we haven't got time, but
okay.
You made your point.
Good point.
Okay, and Lawrence says, considering geography and history, I think that the Finns, non-NATO, Serbs, Germans, oil and gas customers like Siemens, and UN should all be leading the peace effort on this one. Since all politics are local, we should help financially, but not militarily, my two cents, and that's from Larry. And Kevin says, Alan and crew, I can't believe of you guys, at least some of you, think that declaring war, even sending troops, is a good idea. Are you really willing to send our troops to die for a country with just as many human rights issues as Russia? I think we should have been too quick to paint Ukraine as the good guys here. I don't want Russia to expand either, but is this really the country we want our soldiers to die for?
Okay.
And
so which country do we wait for?
Say again.
What country do we wait
for? Well, when Putin invades Alaska, which will be next year.
How about Italy?
I don't know.
Okay, there's one, but we're trying to keep it
to
one to a customer.
I want to talk about the tyranny of 24/7 email. Yeah. And this is an op-ed piece by Clive Thompson in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And this Labor Day weekend, odds are you'll peek at your work email on your day off and then feel guilty about it. You might envy the serene workers at Daimler, the German automaker. On vacations, employees can set their corporate email to holiday mode. Anyone who emails them gets an auto reply saying the employee isn't in and offering contact details for an alternate on-call staff person.
But are they in? You know, there are people who say returns, you get the automatic return, and it says, I'm not here, I'll be back next Tuesday. But then they write you personally and say, I got your message.
Yeah,
so in other words, I'm not sure. I get 1,000 a day.
Right.
At least 1,000 a day.
But you are close to a workaholic. And so you love to be in touch all the time, and rightly so. You run the radio station. But for the blue-collar worker, is it not wise to follow a German model and say, look, I am divorcing myself unless there is an absolute crisis. I'm clearing my mind of this.
You make a point. But on the other hand, Ray, you speak out of one side of your mouth, but you do the other.
What is that?
Well, I have seen many times when somebody has written you and you write right back to them.
That's not
on
true.
On the weekend.
That's not true. That's my doppelganger.
That's your doppelganger.
That's my good
that's
employee
the guy who
doppelganger.
Looks like you,
yes.
But isn't you.
Well, it says here, these changes can't happen through personal behavior. The policy needs to come from the top. If your boss regularly emails you a high-priority question at 11, the real message is, at our company, we do email at midnight. So, Libby, what do you make of all this?
Well, as somebody who runs her own business, and I'm really the business at the moment, you know, I deal with freelancers and stuff, you know, and I'm a political consultant, and I'm dealing with things that are happening all the time quickly and needs a response. Yes, I am guilty of this, and I do respond. I do wake up and look at my email.
Even on vacation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because
me too.
I know you do.
You know, I'm in the same boat as Alan. It's just a lot smaller. You know, we're the buck stops at the two of us.
Sure. If somebody writes to you and says at 2 o'clock in the morning, help.
Help.
WAMQ is not on the air right now.
Right.
What do I do? Say, okay, it's not my job. I'm going back to sleep. No, you call the control room or you write to them and say, you know, what's going on?
Right.
Rosemary.
Help.
My name is Rosemary and I am an electronics addict.
So all the time.
I should not be. I think it takes away time from my family, from writing. My students don't get papers done because they're just clicking on in class and otherwise to email. It's an excuse. It's very hard to manage the time. I like the essay because it had some hints, like keep your personal email out of your work email. Because then if you want to read, like, you know, the sappy stories of somebody who's breaking up, you can go into that, but you're not getting drawn back into work. Yeah, and I think that I would really like to change the way
I must confess, I was exactly like Alan for years. I've been here 17 years.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so what I have tried to do now, since texting is now much more common,
right.
On my last vacation, I said, look, if there is an emergency, Alan and everybody else has my text. I am going to try, and I didn't. I fell off the wagon a couple times. Mm-hmm. Try not to check my work email. If there's an emergency, everybody knows how to get a hold of me. But it's awfully
it's
tough to break
addictive.
That
it's
cycle.
It's just way, way, way addictive.
It's true.
I find that I can't actually talk to friends like I used to. I hate the telephone. It just seems long and boring. It's like you can text.
140
and just,
characters or less,
yeah,
please.
I know. It's like, okay, what else? No, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah,
right,
but
listen,
just think what the impact this is going to have on future generations where we don't want to talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
We are out of time. I'd love to talk to you more, but we are, in fact, out of time.
Send us an email.
Yeah.
Text me.
Even more than 140 characters. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Facebook me.
Our number 2, if you can believe it, is coming up.